AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. There is definitely no back off in the volatility of the markets this morning. We'll get that covered along with the latest developments from Ukraine. But first, we need to get an update on what's happening in the used machinery markets.
Live from the finale of February Madness via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Machinery Pete Greg Peterson, then it's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Laurie.
Yeah, Davis, man, I tell you what, I picked a heck of a time to take a couple of days off and help the family with some efforts.
Bro, what'd you do?
It all fell apart without you. I had nothing to do with it. I just want you to know, absolutely nothing to do with it. But what happened continues to happen.
Yes.
The timeline on which it is happening, I don't think is falling in line with what Russian President Putin had in mind, and that is raising the risks globally associated with Russia's invasion of Ukraine significantly. And that risk is being reflected in the commodity markets. It's being reflected in the equities. The energy markets in particular, we've got the crude oil market back over $95 this morning. Mm-hmm. It just a whole lot of we don't know how this is going to turn out is being factored into the markets right now, Davis. And the longer it takes, the greater the risks or the odds that we are going to see a real significant impact on the ags. And when I say real impact, I mean transfer of demand from one region of the world to another.
Mm-hmm.
Once that starts to happen, I don't know where we're going. I just don't know. And that's the conversation that I want to have with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady at the bottom of the hour.
That'll be great.
We've got to talk more about markets, and the potential impact of Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. He and I spoke for a Pro Farmer podcast after AgriTalk on Friday, and he had talked about in all of his years, he has never seen market gyrations. That's my word, gyrations. Like what we saw once Russia crossed the border.
Yeah. Absolutely phenomenal. Just ran it up as hard as I've ever seen any market run to the upside, and then turn it around, not just for that day, but for the next day as well, and take it back to the downside. Now, today, we're trading inside of last Thursday's and Friday's price ranges. Surprise, surprise, huh?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And I would suspect that is going to continue for quite some time.
It's a wide runway.
Yes, that's right. Right. All right. Let's get to it. What have you got in the news?
Sure thing. Well, the latest street fighting has broken out in the center of Kharkiv as Russian troops enter Ukraine's second largest city. Russia has now invaded Ukraine with the majority of the 150,000 troops it had amassed along the country's borders. The Ukrainian army said it was targeting Russian supply lines while fighting to keep control of Kiev and Kharkiv, although satellite images show a large unit of Russian forces closing in on the capital. Chip-select Russian banks have been banned from participating in SWIFT, the international payment system. Vladimir Putin on Sunday put Russian nuclear deterrent forces on high alert.
Okay, and this right here is why that gives me chills. It goes back to the long address that he made to the Russian people leading up to the invasion when he said, we do not have a border with Ukraine. We have a border with America because Ukraine is reflecting America's wishes.
Mm-hmm.
His state of mind is being questioned. And if he is in a corner, which I think he is.
Yep.
It is hard telling what he is going to do and who he will direct that that effort at. I don't think nuclear is an option yet, but we cannot rule it out.
Yep. Well, as global sanctions kick in, the ruble is crashing and crippling. Hyperinflation could be on its way. The ruble fell as far as 119.50 per dollar on Monday. That's down 30% just from Friday's close. In other news, OPEC Plus revised downward its forecast for the 2022 oil market surplus by about 200,000 barrels per day. The data also shows stocks in the developed world standing at 62 million barrels below the 2015 to 2019 average by the end of 2022. President Biden will deliver his annual State of the Union address on Tuesday this week. That's tomorrow. Key topics will include an update on the Russian invasion of Ukraine and what the U.S. and its allies are doing, and some of the economic impacts short term. Other topics include perspective on inflation, supply chain glitches, Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson, and climate change. Biden is also likely to announce plans to accelerate the return of the federal workforce, and we're seeing some shifts in COVID policy, Chip.
Yeah, exactly. That's the other one that I think there's going to be a lot of conversation about, is a shift in COVID policy.
Well, North Korea launched a ballistic missile off the east coast of the Korean Peninsula yesterday, an undesirable move for peace stabilization while the world is trying to resolve the Ukraine war, South Korea's National Security Council said in a statement. The launch is North Korea's eighth test this year and comes nearly 1 month after Pyongyang fired what it claimed was its longest-range ballistic missile since 2017. Chip.
Man. Yeah, that's what we need. Get everybody involved, huh?
Sure, why not? Fire them all up.
That's right. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Chip. How are you?
We're doing okay. We've got a beautiful day here today. Looking forward, we talked last week about an active outlook for the Eastern Belt. It's still there, isn't it?
It is, Chip. Absolutely. We've got an interesting pattern evolving. It's very warm this week, but next week we set up this really tight gradient of being very warm east and really pretty cold in the central plains. And so kind of right in between that, we see a very active pattern next week with advertising 200 to even 300% of the normal precipitation. So yeah, with that, I mean, we're even talking about enhanced thunderstorm and severe weather chances and possible flooding too. So it is a very, very busy first couple weeks of March for sure.
Well, Michael, we had that conversation on Tuesday last week, and I started paying closer attention to some of the other forecasts out there to see if they were falling in line with your outlook. And lo and behold, we started seeing some of the forecasters out there saying, wow, look out for this. Now, when you say severe weather, are we talking about summertime kind of severe weather with tornadoes and so on?
Yeah, I think it's possible, Chip. Now, let me preface, I think the focus on that would be like Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, like, you know, kind of the deep south, the southern portions of the Ag Belt. But definitely, I think there's going to be several days of severe weather events in the month of March. I really do. So not
that,
quiet at all.
That's a little disturbing. Good grief, Michael. That's
worrisome. I wish I had better news for you, buddy.
Well, you know, a lot of times our conversation ends like that, Michael.
Yeah, that's our relationship. That's what it is.
That's right. All right, buddy. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later. That is Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Coming up next, let's get an update on the used machinery market. We got Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, right here on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Authority Supreme Herbicide from FMC. Learn more at ag.fmc.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. It's Monday. That means it's time for a conversation with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Greg, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well, Chip. How are you doing?
We're doing just fine, just fine. Okay, last week you had a Machinery Pete monthly online auction. I'm going to ask, go ahead and pull the pick of the week from that auction, if you would.
Yeah, a little challenging because there were a number of tractors that sold very high. But if you press me, Chip, I'd probably pick the 1989 John Deere 4555 two-wheel drive. Of course, those 55 series, you know, a lot of love out there for them. 3,177 hours. Came out of Southwest Kansas, and it sold for $59,500, which is the all-time record high auction price on a two-wheel drive 4555. And actually, it's the third highest auction price on any 4555 sold. Now, interesting side note and piece of data, as you know me, I'm a data guy. The previous record price on a 4555 two-wheel drive was $51,000. So, it went $85,000 over that. But that came from February of 08. So 14 years ago. So, yeah, that would be my pick of the week. But
yeah. So instead of breaking records that are 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, now we're talking about 14 years old.
14 Crazy. Years old, right. I'm trying to remember 2008. Geez, both our daughters were still at home, and holy cow, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
But on the topic of 08, there was another tractor on our auction last Tuesday, Chip. It was an 08 John Deere 8430. So, of course, pre-def, pre-tier 4. 4,664 hours, came out of Eastern Colorado. That sold for $151.25, which is the highest auction price ever on a 4,000-plus hour 8430. And it beat the record, which had just been set back on November 29th out of Northeast Missouri. So that is definitely a trend I've been seeing, is higher hour, good condition tractors all over the country. It's not just the value on the super low hour stuff going up. It's everything.
That adds another layer to this, doesn't it, Greg, bringing in the higher hour equipment?
Yeah, it does. And now you're starting to chip at, again, that 8430, of course, was an 08. People are assessing the current situation, you know, with new equipment difficult to even get. It's all been pre-sold. The supply chain's all messed up. Used inventories are tighter than ever. So I think farmers are looking ahead and starting to vote with their checkbook and like, you know, I just need to get my hands on maybe the most reliable tractor that I can kind of work on a little bit if I have to going forward. Right. So that brings up, you know, something like I saw Saturday, a farm auction in St. Louis, Michigan, by my good friend Scott Sikora, Sikora Auction Service. He had a sale, and he had a 2000 John Deere 8410 with 6,460 hours on it. So, you know, it's not something I'd write about that people would be like, oh, my God, it's got 1,500 hours.
Right.
So 6,460 hours, it still sold for $105,000, which seemed pretty high to me. So then I just looked at our auction price data, machinerypete.com, which, again, folks, it's free. So just go look. You look at everything I'm looking at. And, Chip, if you look and use our filters, the four highest auction prices ever on an 8410 Deere tractor have all come in the last 2 months.
Oh, geez.
So, this is a 20-plus-year-old tractor. So that's what I mean. Good condition, higher hour tractors are going up. The same sale had a 2,083 10 John Deere was almost 7,800 hours. It sold for 92, second highest ever on an 8,310 with over 6,000 hours. And again, this one almost had 8,000. The only one higher was 3 months ago. So again, that's just what we're seeing out there.
Okay. All right. Now we know that there's demand out there for the equipment.
Yep.
And it's being reflected very clearly, but you said something earlier in this conversation that we've talked a little bit about, but haven't really dug into it, and that's the inventory of the used equipment. Where do we stand on that?
Well, so folks, if you watched Ag Day this morning, you saw a clip that I put out, my weekly Monday segment. And last week, I wanted to put some meat on the bone, just like you asked, Chip, with this used inventory situation. How much tighter is it? Okay. So, you know, and again, I'm a data guy. That's my history. So I looked back 3 years ago to 2019, the same week of February. Okay. Now, this is shocking data. But if you looked at the number of three-year-old 175-plus horse tractors available for sale on the home market, we're down 79.3% versus 3 years ago right now. And if you look at five-year-old 175-plus tractors, we're down 66.7%. So when I say this is the tightest used inventory situation ever, that's the math. And that's... Yeah. I posted a YouTube video yesterday, Chip, and it got a lot of discussion because there's one scenario that I see that's really concerning to me, and it's because of this super tight inventory situation. Now, grain prices are high. You know, it's a volatile time, obviously, but profitability is there. When that window shuts, if the supply chain hasn't fixed itself and allowed more new equipment purchases to happen, when the pullback occurs, what will be different this time is the pullback will happen into the tightest used market in history.
Right.
And so sales of new would back off when income drops. People then default to used, and people assume that used values would tank.
But
they won't tank because there's no inventory.
Right.
So they might recede a little bit, but they're going to stay high because if you need a tractor, you need a tractor. So hopefully the supply chain can get worked out here quickly.
Okay.
But that's probably not going to happen.
Is it a lack of new coming into the system that has created this shortage? Or is it once somebody buys – if somebody's bought a piece of equipment in the last 5 years, they're not going to be cycling anything back out into the market?
Well, the thing you have to look at – and again, we don't tend to think about this, but you have to look at the raw number of units sold, new units sold.
Yeah.
So when there was an overhang when we came out of the last good time of 2008 to early 13, dealers had way too much late model inventory, and that overhang was available for you to go buy a 2-, 3-, 4-year-old tractor, combine, sprayer, planter. But now, like I just told you with those stats, that overhang is gone. And so it was there weren't as many new units sold in 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Mm-hmm. And now the window is open. People have money. They want to buy new, but the manufacturers can't make it because they can't get the chips and all this other stuff. So my concern is that if this window shuts before the supply chain gets fixed, again, people will pull back and go, well, we'll just ride with what we got. But the used inventory situation it's never been this tight. It just never has. So
that's when we start looking at service and parts and availability of that.
Yep. Well, that makes me look at a sale like Steffes Group has a sale coming Wednesday, Chip, online farm auction in Lemoore, North Dakota. And I got looking at the online bidding this morning, just posted a note on Facebook, but they have a 78 model John Deere 4240 power shift, almost. That's over 6,700 hours. The online bid's already at 34.5, 2 days out.
What?
Yeah. Now that's not a collector. That's people going, you know, that's a reliable workhorse that's bulletproof. I can wrench on that baby if times get tough. Yes, 40K sounds like a premium for that thing, but if I can't get a new 130 horse, whatever that I need, that becomes a bargain. So again, everything is the footing underneath is shifting, and it's causing all kinds of reactions. So I'm just trying to document it and keep us up to date.
Who's got that 4240?
That's a Steffes sale on Wednesday. It's an online sale. It's at night. It closes at 7 p.m., and there's a 2011 John Deere 8335R, 2,800 hours, IVT, ILS. You can imagine that pre-def, how hot the bidding is on that. And I'm seeing this all over the country. You got to get aggressive to get what you need, and that's why prices are going up.
Yep, Yep. Hey, real quick, take us to Illinois and give us some of those red prices.
Yeah, last Monday, online farm auction by Sullivan Auctioneers, record price on a 2012 Kasich Steiger 500 HD, 1,659 hours, $267,000. Chip, it was $36,750 over the previous record, which had just been set right before Christmas. Another record price on a 96 5240 case, two-wheel drive, 4,400, almost 4,500 hours at 45K. The record again was just set last year. Record price on a 2020 Case IH 7250 combine, 652 engine hours at 347. So good condition used. Man. It's just, it's rising.
Wow. Great conversation, Greg. Man, this, those inventory numbers just blow me away.
Yeah, it's something else, but we'll keep at it. And we'll always good to talk to you, Chip.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Greg. That's Greg Peterson at Machinery Pete. When we come back, let's talk about the impact on the markets from Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Brian Grady coming up next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
All right, a little bit of a preview of what we're going to be talking about in the next segment. ProFarmer editor Brian Grady is with us. Beej, big moves to the upside in the grain markets. A lot of it is in reaction to what's going on in Ukraine. Anything else that you're watching right now?
No, not really, because that's what the market's watching. So, I think that's the key driver. But ultimately, it comes down to money flow. And we saw money last week, on Thursday flow into the long side aggressively. Friday, they took some out. Today, they're pumping it back in. So, that's the primary driver right now is money flow. The Russia-Ukraine situation is the fundamental behind that.
Right. And I look at what's going on in the stocks or the equities. We've got some pressure there, so maybe some money rolling out of equities and into the long side of commodities?
Absolutely. We've seen that in a pretty big way here recently. So when you look over the past couple of weeks, money flowing out of the equity market and into commodities. And that's a potential big, big change that we've seen, because the equity market had been the driver for quite some time on money flow.
Right. All right. Take us over to the livestock trade. The downside correction in that hog market was turned into something significant.
Well, it did. It was a three-day wave last week, so Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That means that price action early this week is critical, and we're trying to work to the upside in corrective trade so far this morning. Just modest gains in all but the April contract there. The cattle market continues to sell off, and feeder cattle are down sharply in reaction to the strength in the corn market this morning. Live cattle tried to work higher initially, but they've backed off in all the deferred contracts now.
All right, stick around, Brian. We're going to have an extended conversation coming up next.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Machinery Pete here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could be with us. Really a fascinating conversation with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, about what's going on in the used equipment market with the inventory and everything. We had a preview of what we're going to be talking about in this next segment here. Welcome back. I'm Chip. We've got Davis Michelson is still with us. And
yes, sir.
Davis, indeed. Obviously, jump into this conversation because
all right,
that fertilizer.
I'm sure you can handle it.
I like to think that I could, but the fertilizer trade is going to have a big impact from what's going on with Russia and Ukraine as well. But let's get Brian Grady back in here. Brian, give us the latest. What is the latest that has encouraged this movement of money flow back to the long side of the commodities?
Well, uncertainty is the driver, and you know, the things escalated again over the weekend, and I think that it was the nuclear warning, basically, from Putin to his country to go on high alert for nuclear action, and you know, that would be the next. There's a difference between the invasion, which happened last week and continued through the weekend, and if we get into a nuclear war, I think that that's the heightened anxiety on the trade standpoint so far here to kick off the week. It doesn't mean that it's imminent by any means, but he signaled that it could happen, and I think Putin, he's a wild card. Who knows? You know, I mean, what he's thinking and things like that. But the interesting thing is, I think
Hey, Beej, let me comment on that. I think we do know what he is thinking, because he has basically telegraphed everything that he has done. You go back to there was a speech by the Russian defense minister or military minister, something like that, back in December, where he said, look out on February 22nd at 4 a.m. in the morning. The world's going to change, and Russia is going to change. And basically he was saying, on 2/22/22, we're going to invade Ukraine. And they did it. And there are other examples of people saying, nah, you don't know if you can trust what he's saying or not. He's followed through with just about everything that he said he's going to do.
Yeah, and he wants to reunite the Soviet Union. That won't happen. I mean, barring something just hugely unforeseen, the world isn't going to let that happen. But that's what he wants. I mean, he wants the old Soviet Union back together. Ukraine's the first and a major piece of that puzzle, obviously.
Right, right. So what stops him?
Well, sanctions right now are starting to hit pretty heavy. The Russian central bank had to raise interest rates to 20%, so they more than doubled. So we're already seeing that. I think what the rest of the world right now is trying to do is separate Putin from his citizens, and with the sanctions and locking up money and things like that, and trying to get them to turn on him. That's the easiest way out of it is if something like that happens. If it doesn't, then you have to take more action. But the rest of the world, NATO and so on, and U.S. and allies are trying to stay out of it from a military standpoint. We'll see if that continues or not. But for now, they're trying the sanctions. That the SWIFT, which is the international banking talking system, basically a communication system, that's been shut
clearinghouse.
Off. Yeah. And the other one is Switzerland is going to freeze Russian assets. So that is huge, because Switzerland's always been the neutrality in the world.
Right.
And
well,
so
did I see this morning that Switzerland and Finland are going to join NATO?
I haven't seen that one necessarily, but that doesn't mean that I haven't caught everything. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff coming at
me. A million things flying around.
Yeah. The other one is that I'd heard that Ukraine may be trying to enter the European Union and applying for membership there. So I don't, some of this stuff, you got to chase it all down, because you don't know if it's real or if it's speculation,
right,
or whatever it is. And that's right, the hard part of it. I think I made this comment to Davis. Last Thursday was the most intense, in-your-face day of activity that I can remember in my career.
Right.
It just was absolutely nonstop. Can't, sprint and can't catch your breath type of day for the entire day.
Right.
That much stuff going on. Different than other things like 9/11, because, you know, markets closed then.
Yep.
I mean, so that was a kind of like a, oh, crap, you know, but sit back, and there wasn't market activity to deal with at the same time that there was all the other stuff.
Right.
And there's other examples, the BSE case in early 2000s in the United States that happened on a Christmas Eve day. You remember that
2003.
One.
2003. Yeah, you and I sat and did a special issue of Pro Farmer.
Absolutely. So there's been other examples and things like that over the years, but nothing that I can remember that lasted the duration and just was like, I mean, it was drinking out of a fire hose the entire day.
Right.
That was.
Yeah. And I was out of the office helping the family with some things and constantly on my phone trying to keep up with exactly what was going on out there and watching the markets. And I can understand exactly what you're saying when it may have been the most intense market day. Volume was just unbelievable on Thursday.
Yeah, and you know, the markets reacted exactly how you would expect they would. Just knee-jerk, extreme knee-jerk, limit up corn, limit up wheat. You know, and those are the two markets that are impacted the most. Wheat, you know, the two countries combine for about 30% of global wheat exports, and it's about a fifth of global corn exports between the two, with Ukraine being the much more important one of the two there. But, you know, it just like those are the two markets that it matters most. Soybeans, not as much. There's a indirect tie, so to speak, with the sunflower oil. And, you know, Russia and Ukraine account for 80% of global sunseed oil trade. So that there just isn't a direct futures market for it. So that's the difference there.
Right. Okay. Thursday spike to the upside. And then set back, and then follow through selling on Friday. Basically, Davis and I were kind of joking about it at the start of the show. That cut a very wide path for these markets to follow for the foreseeable future. We've got major gains going in the grain markets, and we are nowhere near breaking out of that range that was established by the Thursday Friday. Trading ranges.
Absolutely. To me,
it feels like we're going to stay inside of that for a while.
I think so. It would probably take something along the lines of nuclear attacks or, you know, something like that. That's a game changer at this point in time. But you're right. The Thursday's high and Friday's low are pretty, you know, they're huge. You know, so there's a lot of area there to work within. And I think we will see continued volatile trade, but within those boundaries or parameters or however you want to label it.
Right. And, boy, I liked it when my phone started dinging and Pro Farmer was laying off some of the risk that's associated with it. Number one, taking advantage of the rally that took place, but recognizing the fact that you got to get some additional risk laid off in these markets.
Absolutely. It's really easy to sit back and just, you know, say, hey, I think prices will go higher. The war, you know, it's going to cut off exports out of the Black Sea region or limit them. And, you know, there's more export demand potential and all kinds of stuff like that. Thursday's rally was emotion. I mean, you can argue whatever you want fundamentally. It wasn't fundamental based. It was money flow and it was emotion. And those two things, when rationale and fundamentals go out the window when those two things are combined. And so you have to be rational with your decision making because the market doesn't have to be.
Right.
And probably won't be, in all honesty, for quite some time now. You know, rationale is gone. When emotion and money flow combine together.
Yeah. When you get this kind of a shock to the system that the futures market had to take, you've got to look to the cash market for any sign of stability, and that's going to happen in basis. That's going to happen in flat bids out in the cash market as well. But that's where you got to look for the true signals of what's happening on the supply and demand side of things, right?
I think so, because ultimately it doesn't matter what the futures price is. It's what the cash bid is in your local market that you're delivering to that you get paid. Right. You know, they can whatever the basis is. And okay. So that ultimately that's what it comes down to.
All right. I know you like to think forward. What are your thoughts going forward on what we should expect this week?
Well, continue to monitor this situation. I think, and I mentioned it up front, the critical thing right now is that they're trying to outthink Putin, and the world is, and the U.S. and the allies, and trying to get his people to work against him. Mm-hmm. If that's successful, then maybe we finish this thing a little bit sooner than what he had anticipated. If not, then who knows? And watch on the nuclear side of things, because when his back gets against the wall, that's when he becomes desperate, and that's when he's going to do something more dramatic.
Yeah. Yeah, that timeline, I think, is so critical to what it means for the markets going forward. The longer this lasts, the more likely there will be disruptions and major disruptions of product flowing out of the Black Sea region. So something that, obviously, we need to discuss further. Davis and I will do just that when we come back. Thanks, Beach. Talk to you later.
You betcha.
Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady, Davis, and I will be right back with more AgriTalk.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Happy Monday, everyone, from all of us here at AgriTalk. Thank you for joining us, for tuning in. Davis Michelson here, your pal Chip Flory joins me.
Yes, I'm here.
Great conversation there with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. I'd love to hear his thoughts on items like this, because he's so on top of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the way that he thinks through these things and speaks so candidly. You know, and I got to thinking about over the weekend, my daughter called me, Dad, what is going on? I'm, you know, she's nervous.
Hey,
and actually,
same conversations.
She lives out in the D.C. area, actually. She's in that part of Virginia. And so she's a little bit nervous. And I think about Zelensky's comments last week, and we reported on them in the morning show. It must have been Thursday morning, perhaps Friday morning, arming the citizens, urging the citizens to be prepared to defend the Ukraine in the town squares and handing out firearms to civilians at the police offices and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
billboards explaining how to make a Molotov cocktail.
Yes.
Yeah.
Imagine, you know, good people of America, of Canada. We here in the, in the enlightened West, where we're really concerned about a whole bunch of other things. Imagine our leader saying something like that to us. You know, try to put yourself in the mind of these Ukrainians trying to defend their country against Russia with such direct measures coming directly from the citizenry itself in some cases. That's what really gets me about this, is that sort of human element.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Now, look at the other side of this human element, and that would be the attitude of the Russian troops. I can only go, obviously, I've got no connection into it. I'm only going off of reports that I see, and I know that you've got to take most of what you see and hear. You got to check it out for yourself.
You do. Yep.
And the more that I check it out, and the more people that I talk with, the more convinced I am that some of the signals that I'm seeing from the reports that the Russian troops, their heart is not in it, their will is not in it, is becoming more and more evident. And the resistance of the Ukrainian citizens against a less than enthusiastic Russian army, this is not going as Russian President Putin expected. His timeline is busted. He very quickly played the without pushing any buttons, played a nuclear card.
Yep.
It's evidence of just how desperate the situation has become for him. Another thing that I think is adding to his frustration is President Xi Jinping in China starting to put at least an arm's length distance and being noncommittal on the issue. I bet that's not what they talked about the day before the Olympics started.
No, certainly not. I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so. I go back to things I've read about the siege of Stalingrad back in World War II and the way that deserters and quote-unquote enemy sympathizers were treated in the Russian military force. You would hate to see Putin's generals or whatever they call them in Russia, you know, divert to those sort of tactics. Yeah, their military leaders. Assume those sorts of tactics against their own soldiers as motivation. Right. Look, you need to fight or else.
Or else.
Period. Yeah.
Right. Right. But, and we've seen this before, you know, in examples that go up. For me, one of the most vivid examples of this goes back to 1989 in Tiananmen Square in Beijing, where a single man stopped
one guy.
A tank.
Yep.
Well, you see some of the video of 30, 40 people standing in a road and a tank stopping 200 yards away because they see the people and not advancing any further, turning around and going the other direction. What I have not seen is the tank just continuing to roll forward.
Right.
I'm not saying that that has not happened. I just haven't seen it. But I have seen examples of relatively small groups of people stopping the advancement of a tank. It makes you wonder. It makes you question if their heart is in it or not.
So that's sort of a very brief discussion of the human element about it. I've got an email here from our good friend Josh Linville at StoneX.
Oh, yes.
And what he's done is broken out the price comparison on a pound of N basis between NOLA urea and NOLA UAN.
Okay.
And we've talked about that NOLA price being underpriced compared to the rest of the world. Like, for example, right now, NOLA urea is trading on paper at $650 a ton. In Egypt, they're doing trades around $790, $800. But up by a pound of N UAN, 87.5 cents. Per pound of actual N. NOLA urea, 70 cents per pound of actual N. So we've got UAN already at a premium to urea at NOLA. There's a pretty good amount of UAN that comes out of Russia.
Right.
And so we could be looking at even higher prices. These are the values that we're looking at this point in the conflict. Okay. If this goes on and continues, we're going to continue to see UAN go much higher, much higher.
Right. Okay. One thing that I'm watching very closely are the protests in Moscow.
Yes.
If the police continue to shut them down as quickly as they have been, that's one thing. If the protests grow, Putin's got a lot of problems. Hey, come back this afternoon. We're going to keep the conversation going. Mike Mock Consulting, right here on AgriTalk 206 Central.